The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets
and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, from Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives of women history has forgotten. We've always been intrigued by stories of disappearances, whether it's a fraudster from the 17th century who kept evading the authorities or a novelist who taunted the Nazis and faked her own death. We all want to know, what happened next? To find out, listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Welcome to Spooky Week!
A week where we are not really any spookier, honestly, than the average things happening, because everything happening is terrifying, and like ghosts and ghouls are a lot more fun. Anyway, hang up. In this podcast, don't listen. Go watch Herbert West Reanimator. Have some fun. But if you decide to keep listening to podcasts for some reason, we have a bunch of spooky content for you this week. How was that? How was that introduction, Sophie?
Ooh, bad.
Ooh.
Spooky.
All right.
Scary.
Garrison.
Terrified.
Yeah.
Get going. Do your thing.
Yeah, my thing. So yeah, we're doing spooky week, which we're very excited about. But yeah, everyone I've told about spooky week, they're like, oh, so it's just a regular week for the show. I'm like, pretty much.
No, it's more fun.
But it is, in a few ways, it is actually going to be more fun, because the spooky mind-bending tales
commit to the goddamn bit.
Yeah, spooky mind-bending tales actually do have some more fun than just the solely depressing ones.
Yeah. I mean, this was the first theme week that we all agreed upon months ago.
This was
ago.
The first theme week,
I was like,
yeah.
Can we do something around spookiness near Halloween? And everybody unanimously said, yes.
Yes. Yes. This is the first theme week. We have been promising Nut Week coming up eventually.
Yeah,
we'll have to tease.
We talk about things that made us nut, or were we talk about the legumes?
Mostly legumes.
Okay, that's fair.
But anyway, we should start off our first spooky tale. So I'm going to tell a very very spooky tale of an entire French town going mad over the course of a single week.
Hell yeah.
Probably with the help of psychoactive drugs and a certain three-letter agency.
You know what I think we're going to get to do, Garrison? Ha-ha, my racist French accent!
I did.
Somebody online.
I did get a few messages
for that. Can't be racist against the French. They're like the British or Americans.
I did get a few messages saying
it's
that
fine.
Your French accent was very racist to the French.
There is a certain number. It's like the Germans. There's a certain number of genocides after which people get to make fun of your country, and it's not racist. And that number is, let's say, 3.
Honestly, the worst part of this story is that we're probably doing critical support for France.
I mean, well, in a way. Well, we'll
sort
see.
Of.
Honestly, I'm going to be kind of more critical support to the CIA by the end of this one.
Hopefully.
Yeah, that is the most critical support can be.
So anyway, our very spooky tale begins in 1951 in a small, charming French village called Pont Saint-Esprit, which is how I'm going to say
Pont Saint-Esprit.
There you go.
Yeah, there we go.
So, not much happened in this little picturesque little town on the south side of France. You know, on the day we start, it's just like a regular summer day. People are going about their routine, going to their jobs. Kids are playing in the street, enjoying some delicious, freshly baked bread. But suddenly,
croissant.
Strange things begin happening. And I'm going to start off with some of the more mild effects here.
Mm-hmm.
So, on August 15th, first, dozens, then hundreds of people began first just complaining of nausea, and some people with some like stomach and abdominal pain.
They're coming up. Yeah.
less often noted. There was a few instances of like vomiting and diarrhea. Only about 30% of people had diarrhea. That is a weirder thing.
That's a lot of diarrhea.
Yeah, that is on like a town-wide basis. 30% that's a significant strain on the sewage system.
30% of the people affected, which is going to be like a few hundred versus.
If I was
taking
drugs with a group of friends and a third of them had diarrhea, I would say we might need to go to a hospital. This is a sign that perhaps what we got was tainted.
We'll be talking about what the actual drugs being used here are going to be.
Unless we were taking Amanitas or something where that's not an uncommon side effect. But yeah, so yeah. Sorry,
first,
continue.
First nausea, a little bit of vomiting, stomach pains, cramping. Hospitals began reporting people experiencing alternating warm and cold waves over their entire body. Mm-hmm. The British Medical Journal recalls abundant sweating and a disagreeable odor, which I'm guessing the odor is just because there's all those sweating people in the same cramped hospital room.
Yeah, sweating people in the summer heat.
Yeah. So anyway.
And they're French, so. A lot of escargot sweats. That's all I'm saying.
I don't want to get more messages saying that I have to stop.
By saying that, he's going to do it more.
By the way, do we know that the diarrhea was the result of whatever substance, or maybe it's just the wine shits? Again,
we
French.
Don't. There's no way to tell.
There's no way to know.
So yeah, patients began complaining about weird pains and pressure around their neck, and one of the most reported symptoms was insomnia, in some cases lasting several days. Quoting the British Medical Journal. The first symptoms appeared after a latent period of 6 to 48 hours. The digestive disorders quickly became worse, with burning sensations throughout the entire digestive tract. Some experienced sensations of burning at the anus. A state of giddiness persisted.
I mean, who's not giddy when your anus is burning? Am I right?
I do like this is like the clear sign that there's like some psychoactive drug going on because like your anus is burning and yet
you're
very giddy.
Psyched. You are on board. Yeah. It's like that sign from that. What is that from? Rejected by what's that cartoonist? Like my anus is bleeding, but like you're down. You know,
you're down for it. Yeah.
Yeah. You're 110%.
Was that a John Mulaney impression?
No. It's who did Rejected?
Because that was bad.
It wasn't a John Mulaney impression, Sophie.
Oh, okay.
That's just your poisoned millennial brain.
Cartoon. Don Hertzfeld. Yeah, great artist.
Yeah, great artist. So these pale and limp patients, still quoting the British Medical Journal, these pale and limp patients showed inconspicuous trembling of the extremities, and they complained of disorders of the visual accommodation and especially being unable to read. So this is the more mild.
They're French, so.
This is the.
this could be a long one, Gare.
So this is for many people affected. This is where the symptoms stopped. After suffering for insomnia for a while with mild disorders of the visual accommodation, and stomach pains and like weird like neck things. After they were able to sleep, that was the sign of their recovery. It's like the ability to sleep again after the insomnia wore off. But in around 50 of the cases reported, the effects were much more intense. I'm going to continue from the medical journal first and then get into some of the more colorful reporting around the incident. Quoting the medical journal again, vivid visual hallucinations appeared. In particular, themes of visions of animals and of flames. All of these visions were fleeting and variable. In many of the patients, they were followed by dreamy delirium.
Yeah, that's about right. That's actually a pretty good description of, like, LSA, LSD, those kind of, like, the movies always get it wrong because you're not usually not like you're not seeing some sort of like visual like cartoon world. It's these kind of like fleeting impressions of visions and things in the corner of your eyes. Yeah, it's a pretty good description.
Especially on lower like it is unclear what exactly they were on because there definitely can be the more cartoon elements.
Oh, I mean, you can get full open-eyed hallucinations, like especially the Shogun chemicals will do that, but I don't get it so much with like LSD, LSA. And LSA, if you want to shit yourself.
Ooh, that is
see, right? Eat some Hawaiian baby Woodrose seats.
Yeah,
get them from Home Depot and have yourself a horrible night.
So the delirium seemed to be systematized with animal hallucinations and self-accusation. It was weird terms from the medical journal.
Self-accusations.
Yeah, I think they're trying to get at ego death, but they don't have terms for it yet.
Either that or that, like, sometimes you're hallucinating, you get, like, overcome with, like, guilt, like, oh, I did this terrible thing, or, like, everybody's angry at me, or whatever, like.
Continuing from the medical journal, self-accusation, and it was sometimes mystical or macabre. In some cases, terrifying visions were followed by fugus, which is an old term for, like, fugues. It says fugues.
Fugue. It's pronounced fugue. Yeah,
it's like extreme disassociation.
You're kind of zombified a little bit.
Yeah, and two patients threw themselves out the window.
Oh boy.
Yeah. Beef. The delirium was of a confusal kind, which could be interpreted for some moments by a strong stimulation. Every attempt at restraint increased the agitation.
Well, yeah, that's how restraining people. I've had to restrain a number of people, and it does not calm anyone down.
Especially
people don't like to be restrained.
Especially when you're tripping hard.
Yeah,
this sounds like a real bad time.
Not the thing to do.
In severe cases, muscular spasms appeared. The duration of these periods of delirium was varied. They lasted several hours in some patients, and in others they persisted overnight. So that and then here it's we're going to get a little bit darker, and then we're going to have more fun. We observed four fatal cases, 3 men and 1 woman. 3 of these people were old and in bad health. One of the men was only 25 years old and had been in good health previously. They died in a muscular spasm in a state of cardiovascular collapse. I think this is probably mostly due to how the doctors were handling these patients.
Yeah, that sounds right. I mean, obviously, your blood pressure and whatnot can elevate when you're hallucinating, but I think it also has a lot to do with the way they were being handled. Yeah, you're right.
The disorders developed more quickly in children, but also left them more quickly. An interesting feature of some of the cases was that the delirium was the first sign to be noted. So it depends. People came up on different ways, right? Some of them first had weird body feelings. Some of them first started just seeing stuff. One other interesting tidbit that we're not going to spend much time talking about, but like around 2 weeks after this initial incident, some symptoms started to reappear. Either through like a secondary poisoning, or it was like some kind of like acid flashback.
It must because I've done a fuckload of acid. I've never had a flashback. I did at one point. I mean, I have like done some damage, and so I have permanent tracers. But it's not like my guess is they got. I think the idea that there are like acid flashbacks that are vivid hallucinations has been pretty heavily debunked. My guess is they got redosed.
I don't know. I might fight you, but on the
PTSD. It could be that it was traumatic enough that like they're dealing with PTSD and kind of that's what's happening. But
I don't know. I think I definitely have seen enough reports that would see acid flashbacks definitely actually being a thing in some cases, especially in like the early days of studying these types of drugs in like the '60s. Like the CIA reported a lot of stuff around acid flashbacks around the people that they tortured. But I guess if it's tied to torture, that could just be PTSD stuff.
It could be PTSD. It's also, I mean, one thing you have to note, and I don't know what kind of dose these people were getting. When the CIA would dose people, they were sometimes giving people doses people do not take. Like, you do not take that much acid
like hundreds or thousands or millions of hits. Ridiculous,
irresponsible doses. Yeah.
So now we're going to get to some of the more fun descriptions here, which we can actually kind of, like, based on our experiences, can actually kind of see, like, what was actually going on in these people's heads. So basically, we had at least dozens and dozens of people tripping very, very hard. The local postman was doing his rounds on his bicycle when he was suddenly overwhelmed by nausea and wild hallucinations. Quoting him, "It was terrible. I had the sensation of shrinking and shrinking, and the fire and the serpents coiling around my arms."
Yeah, that guy had some other stuff going on. because the very first acid trip was on a bicycle. When Heinrich Hoffmann made it and dosed himself, he started coming up, I believe it was in Amsterdam, riding his bicycle, which is like, well, this is lovely. Yeah, I've made something cool.
The postman riding a bicycle to deliver packages and
because
mail?
Because they're in France.
Because it's France. We do not have the vehicles.
It's the 1950s. It's not.
There is
the wheel only came to France in 1924.
I mean, that's. I'm sorry, postman.
So yeah, the mailman fell off his bike and was taken to a hospital in a nearby town. He was put in a straitjacket and he shared a room with three teenagers who were also tripping.
Christ.
And the teenagers were chained to their beds to keep them under control.
Yeah, that's how you.
It sounds
help with
horrible,
that.
Right? It's the worst
I can see
way to
having
trip.
Flashbacks to this, to being chained to a bed while tripping. Yeah, that's a bad thing to do.
Some of my friends tried to get out the window. They were thrashing wildly, screaming, and the sound of the metal beds and jumping up and down. The noise was terrible. I would prefer to die than go through that again.
Yeah,
totally
terrible.
This sounds like the worst acid trip you could go on.
That sounds like about the worst way you could have a trip go.
Sounds awful. So back in the French town, a little girl screamed as she was being chased by man-eating tigers.
Oh my goodness.
A woman sobbed about how her children had been ground into sausages.
Oh, great.
Oh, no.
So graphic and specific.
Yeah.
A large man fended off a terrific beast by smashing his furniture and using the wood as weapons.
Good for you, buddy. Good for you.
A husband and wife ran around chasing each other with knives.
Again, probably something else going on there. My guess is we're not just talking the acid in that. Because I have, again, been on acid a lot around knives and other weapons.
I've never chased someone around with knives on acid. But again,
who was on the verge of a knife chase the acid.
I think the important part here is that, like, in 1951 in this French town, like, acid wasn't a thing yet. Hallucinogenic drugs weren't a thing, right? Even mushrooms weren't popular around this time. No one knew what the hell was going on. Like, they just think that they're just basically losing their minds. There's no other explanation for what's happening to them.
Can we just say that the most shocking thing that has come out so far is that when Robert was on acid, he wasn't chasing people with knives? That seemed like
depending on your acid trip, you wouldn't want to chase someone with
I've
a knife.
Wanted,
like it's not that's
I mean,
not the kind of headspace you're in.
We would like during the
winter solstice, sober, yeah.
We would take a bunch of drugs and grab my AK-47 and hike out into the woods and we would shoot down a fir tree and we would drag it back to a clearing and we would bury it standing up and we would drape it in pig intestines and put a pig's heart on it and then we cover it in gasoline and light it with firecrackers and dance around it like the pagans of old. But there was nothing aggressive about that.
No, you very rarely would want to hurt somebody on acid, in my experience. Like you generally are at least you're like way more compassionate in a lot of ways. But if you have no idea what acid is and you're in the 1950s and you're losing your mind and you're seeing weird things, then yeah, I can see how this would maybe cause some other types of behavior to
happen.
You
just think that God is angry at you.
It's like they're not dosing themselves either. Yeah. Like they're being dosed, right? It's like they don't, it's very different when like you're deciding to go on a trip versus this is happening to you and you have no decision.
I think for basically anyone in this position, the logical assumption would be, oh, the devil has taken over our town and our minds we have been infested with demons. Like, what else are you going to assume? You're not going to be like, oh, this drug that's just barely been invented and that nobody really knows about yet except for weird nerds. It must be some version of that I've taken accidentally. No, you're going to assume demons are in your blood.
So one interesting tidbit before we go on break, even some of the local animals had been affected by whatever poisoned the town. There was one dog in particular that kept chewing on rocks until its teeth chipped away.
I don't like this.
And ducks were behaving very odd. It's described that they were walking around erect and upright like penguins in a line. And they're just like
what?
Very weird behavior from ducks.
Kind of
that's
makes
the scariest thing I've heard so far.
That kind of makes me want to dose our ducks, Garrison.
We are not we're not wasting acid on the ducks.
You could waste there's a lot of things you could give ducks.
We're not giving ducks acid. That's not happening.
The nice thing about giving ducks drugs is they're all monsters.
That is true. They are monsters and rapists.
Yeah, every one of them.
Yeah.
Well, all of the male ducks.
So anyway, a reoccurring theme was that people were running around wildly and being very fearful of like monstery animals and encroaching flames.
Sounds like the ducks were having a good time, though.
The ducks were having a great time.
Doing their ministry of silly walk shit. Like, I don't know what all these people are bummed about. This is rad.
Okay, so when you first said that, I heard dogs, and I was like, that is the most terrifying thing
ducks,
I've ever heard.
Ducks
is much funnier.
Yeah. It's like ducks standing like very upright like penguins walking around in a line.
I think ducks might enjoy it. I think dogs are a little too aware of what's going
on. Garrison did say dog. The stone thing was about the dog. But
the dog,
I just don't know that
ducks.
The dogs enjoy it. Because, like, I've seen dogs accidentally eat large amounts of pot and whatnot.
And
they get weird.
They're pretty scared.
Having a good time.
They're pretty scared. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know what is also very spooky?
Capitalism.
Yeah, capitalism and all of these spooky advertisements to sell you things. Advertisements are also a form of mind control, speaking of the CIA in the 50s. Anyway.
They're profoundly damaging.
Mother's Day is right around the corner, and in true She Pivots fashion, we're highlighting moms who've dedicated their lives and their pivots to supporting mothers. The iconic Christy Turlington will join us to talk about launching Every Mother Counts after pivoting from her 90s supermodel days. And later, the co-CEOs of Baby to Baby will share how they're addressing the needs for millions of babies and moms. So tune in and subscribe to She Pivots. New episodes out every Wednesday. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And guess what? So are we.
Just in case you forgot, I'm Tori Deal. I'm a 6-time finalist and a Challenge champion.
And I'm Anissa Ferrer, and I've been gracing your screens for the last 2 decades. I am a veteran challenger and Challenge All-Star.
And speaking of All-Stars, All-Stars 4 is finally here.
I'm going to be honest. I literally thought this day was never going to come.
Well, the Challenge gods have answered our prayers, and we're going to be right here along with you fans covering every episode on the podcast.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, redemption seekers, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
Anyone can win, relationships matter, and only one all-star will claim the title of Challenge Champion.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello! Acclaimed comics writer and notorious Scott Summers hater, Rosie Knight.
Well, hello, Emmy-winning podcaster and totally unbiased Targaryen royal supporter, Jason Concepcion.
Rosie, somehow the X-Ray Vision podcast has returned. It feels so good.
It does. And like always, we'll be here every week covering the wide world of TV, movies, comics, and geek culture.
That's right. We'll be talking about Batman, heroes of that stature, and of course, we'll be inviting our friends in the industry to come geek out with us and share stories. We'll hear from TV writers, from actors, comics creators, pop culture critics, and more.
Nothing is off the table, because geek culture is pop culture, and we can't wait to share our love of it all with you every single week.
Listen to X-Ray Vision on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene!
Eugene Fodor!
Gene, we'll boot it!
Much of the joy you will find on the road comes from the person you share it with.
So you write the books, Gene, and Vlastar runs the business. I understand now, it is a wise man marries a wiser woman.
But be careful and choose your travel partner well, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
Get down!
I'm not stupid, Jean. Something is going on, and it's high time you tell me the truth.
Freeze, Americano! Huh? Oh!
Jean, run!
So travel before it's too late. Your money will return, your time won't, and we're all too quickly approaching that final destination.
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We are back from the spooky advertisement.
Nailed it.
Yeah. Anyway, so I think another reoccurring factor for why a lot of these people have very similar types of experiences around like snakes, which we'll talk about later, and like flames is like, with this many people tripping and no one knows what tripping is, I think it's really easy for an idea or a fear to spread from one person to another while they're tripping. With like this many people, I think if someone says something, it's going to start happening to someone else, and it's kind of this like cascading effect where they all develop this very similar fear, is because it's almost like being spread like an infection. So there was a one man convinced that red snakes were devouring his brain, and he jumped out a window.
Oh no! Wait, did he live through this?
He did live.
I'm guessing a lot of these. It's like France in the 50s, so I'm guessing most of these buildings are not super.
They're not super high up. No.
They're like falling a foot or two.
Although here we have another one. Another man reportedly leapt from a window, yelling, "Look, everyone! I'm a dragonfly!" The man broke both legs.
Aww.
Wow!
But he stood up and continued running.
Fucking rad.
Wow. King Sigma behavior.
Yeah, absolute. No,
we're adding
behavior.
This is a new kind of man.
New kind of dude just dropped.
The rarest kind of man.
Look, everyone, I'm a dragonfly. Breaks both legs, keeps running.
Look, amazing. Based on the information you've provided us, I can't say he's not a dragonfly.
No, he is an absolute king. Oh, good for him. I hope he had a great life.
Yeah.
Another one saw his heart escape through his feet and beseeched a doctor to try to put it back into place.
Yeah, you don't want to have that happen.
That doesn't sound fun.
Yeah, you want to keep that somewhere around the middle of your body.
Someone sprinted down the lane claiming that he was being chased by bandits with donkey ears.
Okay, fair enough.
At a nearby river, a man was convinced that he was a circus tightrope walker and attempted to balance his way across the cables of a suspension bridge.
How did he
do? Oh, no. It doesn't say. The report does not tell you.
Sounds like he did great.
Yeah, like
maybe
he's right. He's not in the death report.
Yeah.
So he's not in the death report. And therefore.
another person did try to die in the river. He tried to jump into the river only to be saved by his friends. And he was screaming, "I am dead. I am dead. And my head is made of copper. And I have snakes in my stomach. And they are burning me." Such a weird description of like tripping and saying like, "My head is made of copper." I'm just trying to think of like what was going on. What series of events did he spiral down in his brain to have that sentence? I'm not quite sure. I can definitely see it happening. I'm trying to think like what would happen to get to that point. It's real interesting.
I think some of these are hard because again, it's like these people just literally think they're going insane.
Yeah.
Or that like this stuff is just actually happening to them.
Like when you're tripping on acid, you already kind of have the feeling that there is moments where you feel like this is never going to end. Even though you know you're on acid. These people don't know that, right? Like these people don't have the reassurance. They're like, "No, I took acid. I'm on a drug. This is going to be over."
Yeah, 8 hours
They think this is going to last forever, right? Like they think this is just the world now. Like this is just
one of those. Robert Anton Wilson, who is a thinker I enjoy a lot, writes a lot about how to calm people down when they've taken too much. And most of his advice is around talking about like, "Okay, well, how long ago did you take it? Hey, well, the good news is that this is going to end here. You know, it's only going to last this long. Like you're through this point. Oh, this is the second hour freakies, and by the third hour, you'll be fine again and enjoying it. Like it's all about keeping in people's minds like this is going to pass. So yeah, you're right. Like this is the fucking worst way to take drugs.
All right, so local newspapers and also like in national newspapers described this as among the stricken, delirium rose. Patients thrashed wildly on their beds, screaming that red flowers were blossoming from their bodies. People throwing themselves from rooftops, men and women throwing their clothes off and running in the streets naked, and children complaining their stomachs were infested with coils and snakes.
Oof.
Oof.
Which, I mean, half of that sounds like, yeah, that's like a normal good time, just running around the streets naked on acid. Other halves like, yeah, that doesn't seem pleasant with coils and snakes in your stomach. But also, like, flowers blossoming from your body. I can understand that kind of sensation. But, like, it definitely wasn't all horrible and, like, nightmarish. We already mentioned the giddy people with burning anuses. but for, like, the full-on tripping folks... according to the New York Times, there was reports of people like hearing heavenly choruses and seeing, you know, bright colors. The world looked beautiful to them. Apparently, the head of the farming co-op wrote hundreds of pages of like enlightened tripping poetry.
That guy must be sick as shit because knowing nothing, he starts tripping. Not knowing he's tripping, it's just like, time to make some fucking art. Like, you know what this head state is good for? Writing some shit.
He just like went to his cabin and just wrote poetry.
Yeah, that's fucking awesome. That's a guy, I'll bet he handled just everything that life threw at him well. Like that says a lot about you when you're like, oh, demons have infiltrated my brain. Guess I'm going to hang out in my cabin and write some poems.
Hundreds of pages.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Like I can hardly write shit on acid. I cannot imagine trying to write poetry.
I mean, God. I've done a lot of creative stuff on acid.
Creative stuff, yeah. I just feel like specifically like reading and typing can be hard at certain points. You know, if you're like coming down, it can be easier. But like as
you
do it,
it's not really good for like writing. It's good for ideas that you later can flesh out into writing. But
yeah. So unfortunately, you know, because this was, you know, no one knew what was going on, many people were taken to local asylums in straitjackets and tied onto beds, making things undoubtedly worse for people tripping.
It's one of those things I can't even be angry at them because, like, they don't know what's going on.
I know.
Like you have no idea what's happening.
They don't know what's going on.
Like,
but, like,
nobody
does. The whole, like, every attempt at restraint increased the agitation line is, like, horrifying from the concept of, like, you're tripping. You don't know what's going on. And people are tying you down to beds, making you feel like you're even more stuck in this permanent state of delirium. It's the worst nightmare.
Yeah, all of this is horrible. Yeah.
The mayor of the town said, like, I've seen healthy men and women suddenly become terrorized, ripping their bedsheets, hiding themselves beneath their blankets to escape the hallucinations. So yeah, it's if you don't know what's going on, pretty scary. Except for the poetry guy, good for him.
Yeah,
good for him.
Yeah, making the best of it.
So by the time the effects had subsided for everyone affected, which was around like a few days after the initial reported like nausea, like, you know, it didn't affect everyone at the same time. You know, some people got dosed later on. It's unclear what exactly, because this is the 50s, we didn't have a great idea of the exact timeline of events of like when the first effects were felt and like how all the stuff was spaced out. But this whole incident lasted around like a few days for like everyone totaled. It was reported that anywhere between like 300 to 500 people had felt the effects. You know, around 50 feeling very, very extreme, like open eye, like hallucinations of objects that aren't even there, like very extreme hallucinations. And 4 people did die in connection to the poisoning. At least 4 people died. It's unclear for exact numbers for a lot of this stuff.
Yeah.
An investigation into the sudden outbreak of the madness was promptly underway. Town officials wanted to get to the bottom of this as quickly as possible.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, you would want to figure out what was happening.
Yeah.
Here.
And the blame fell onto a single batch of bread.
What?
So among the common denominator among those affected is that they all allegedly consumed bread from one specific baker.
Yep, that's how it works.
He was accused of using ergot-contaminated rye flour, and he was arrested and temporarily imprisoned. Also, a nearby miller that he got the flour from was also arrested and given some of the blame. The funny part is that around this time, the French government had a very top-down grain distribution system that rigidly controlled everything about where the grains were milled, where they were sent, and what bakers could use which flour. So bakers had no choice in what type of flour to use or what type of grain they could use in baking. It was all decided by other people.
Yeah, because France, bread is like, it's real big deal in
it's
France.
It's pretty important, yeah.
For the record, just like ergot poisoning, there are a lot of cases of like different like dancing manias and whatnot in like the medieval Europe, where like whole towns everyone will start like dancing or like hallucinating. And, you know, they always came down as like these people assumed apocryphal stories about like demon possessions or whatnot. And now a lot of the suspicion is like, oh, yeah, some ergot got into the
No, yeah, it was
everybody was just kind of tripping.
Ergot poisoning, it seems like one of the rougher trips to go on. It's not super clean.
No, I mean, I've done LSA, which I think is similar.
It's similar to ergot and fuel.
Yeah, they're tryptamines that are like really rough. And it's, I would not, don't do LSA.
No Hawaiian baby Woodrow seeds for
if you're going
for the pod.
To take LSA, then actually like synthesize it you out can, of Hawaiian baby Woodrow
you
seeds,
can synthesize
which is a felony.
It and, yeah.
Which is a felony.
It is a felony.
But you can just buy Hawaiian baby Woodrow seeds and eat them, and you will have maybe the worst trip of your life.
Great advice from the pod.
Yeah.
So yeah, on the rye and ergot topic, the past growing season was especially wet, and ergot fungi did grow across the country's
baby.
Rye fields. But the amount of ergot on the rye and the amount of rye used in baking was thought to not be enough to induce any type of poisoning. In fact, the last time ergot poisoning had struck France was back in 1816, so almost like a century and a half before this incident. And
not about a century if it's the 50s, right? A little less than a century.
No, the last incident was 1816. This was 1950.
Oh, 18. I thought you said 1860.
No.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah.
So a century and a half ago, and no other towns, and no other part of France was affected by anything similar to this. So the ergot thing is kind of iffy. But the ergot explanation was the only thing that doctors investigators could come to due to like, you know, their limited knowledge around brain altering substances and just pressure from town officials to get to the bottom of this so that they had something to blame and people could like move on. But you know, as a result, not much evidence really backs up the ergot claim, and a lot of experts today kind of deem it bunk.
There's a bunch of like there's this thing kaikion that the Greeks would take that was like this Greek hallucinatory thing that they think it was because they were putting grain in wine and it might have been ergot poisoned, but also like people enjoyed it, and so there's a lot of debate over whether or not it could have been ergot, but I don't know. I don't know what else is there. Are there other theories about what it might have been if it wasn't ergot?
Oh, Rob. Oh, yes, there is.
Oh boy, is it the CIA? Garrison?
We're gonna get to it. So yeah, it doesn't really make much sense that the high amounts of ergot rye would only be in one batch of grain used in a single batch of bread from just one bakery in one small town. Doesn't really make sense. Other explanations that people have come to includes like mercury poisoning and overuse of other fungicides. These have been mostly disproven.
Yeah, that doesn't seem like mercury poisoning.
No, but
speaking as a guy who likes to drink some mercury, you know.
Oh boy,
Merc on.
So yeah, so there's a lot of other theories around like fungicides being used, but those have been kind of disproven by some people. But others still point to them as possible explanations. But there is one other theory that we will focus on. That features two of my favorite things, LSD and the 1950s CIA. Because if you're going to pick a CIA,
the 1950s one, CIA
they had the most
best.
Fun. They
oh
had the
my
most
God.
Fun, right?
Like, and you know who else has a lot of fun, Garrison?
Who?
And
who
is also
be?
The 1950s CIA.
Whomst?
Our sponsors.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it could happen here is sponsored only by the 50s CIA.
Only the one from the 50s.
Yeah, when you order any of our products, they will come to your house and inject you with 7,000 hits of LSD.
Hey, free! Hey! That sounds like a great deal, honestly. You're saving a lot of money.
You are saving... Yeah. That is a lot of free acid.
A lot of acid for the amount of money you're spending.
Mm-hmm. Look, that's a lifetime... You won't do more acid, that's for
sure.
No,
that's acid for life. You won't do it again.
Yeah, you probably you won't have to do any expenses ever again.
Yeah, yeah.
You'll survive. You'll just be a very different person by the end of the
experience. Yeah, you won't survive. Your body will.
Yeah,
someone else will be inhabiting it at the end of that trip.
Someone else will wake up. So right, speaking of waking up, here is all the products.
Ads. Yeah.
Ads.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And guess what? So are we.
Just in case you forgot, I'm Tori Deal. I'm a six-time finalist and a Challenge champion.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira, and I've been gracing your screens for the last 2 decades. I am a veteran challenger and Challenge All-Star.
And speaking of All-Stars, All-Stars 4 is finally here.
I'm going to be honest. I literally thought this day was never going to come.
Well, the Challenge gods have answered our prayers, and we're going to be right here along with you fans covering every episode on the podcast.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, redemption seekers, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
Anyone can win, relationships matter, and only one all-star will claim the title of Challenge Champion.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Mother's Day is right around the corner, and in true She Pivots fashion, we're highlighting moms who've dedicated their lives and their pivots to supporting mothers. The iconic Christy Turlington will join us to talk about launching Every Mother Counts after pivoting from her 90s supermodel days. And later, the co-CEOs of Baby to Baby will share how they're addressing the needs for millions of babies and moms. So tune in and subscribe to She Pivots. New episodes out every Wednesday. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, acclaimed comics writer and notorious Scott Summers hater, Rosie Knight.
Well, hello, Emmy-winning podcaster and totally unbiased Targaryen royal supporter, Jason Concepcion.
Rosie, somehow the X-Ray Vision podcast has returned. It feels so good.
It does. And like always, we'll be here every week covering the wide world of TV, movies, comics, and geek culture.
That's right. We'll be talking about Batman, heroes of that stature, and of course, we'll be inviting our friends in the industry to come geek out with us and share stories. We'll hear from TV writers, from actors, comics creators, pop culture critics, and more.
Nothing is off the table, because geek culture is pop culture, and we can't wait to share our love of it all with you every single week.
Listen to X-Ray Vision on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi. Rachel Zoe here, and we're going back to the Rachel Zoe Project for a very special takeover on my podcast, Climbing in Heels. Come along with me as I take you back to season one to give you all the behind-the-scenes details and, of course, drama. I'll be joined by some very special guests that'll be helping me break it all down. From award season nightmares to Fashion Week insanity, you'll get the real stories behind some of the most iconic moments in the show. The Rachel Zoe Project definitely changed my life and career in so many ways. The show definitely captured some of the most amazing moments, but also some of the absolute worst. I made the show for all the fashion lovers out there, and I'm so happy that people still watch it and love it so much. So do not miss this special takeover on Climbing in Heels. It's going to be bananas. I cannot believe I just said that. Listen to Climbing in Heels with Rachel Zoe on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcasts.
So, 1950s, CIA, wild time.
Great time.
In 2009, Hank P. Alborelli, is an American writer and journalist, released a book called A Terrible Mistake, which focuses on the suspicious death of a CIA scientist named Frank Olson, who worked on the CIA mind control experiments during the late 40s and early 50s. While researching the book, Alborelli claims to have come across a number of old CIA and White House documents referencing the Pont Saint-Esprit incident, and he claims that the village was the target of a CIA experiment on the mass effects of LSD, and that around the time that Frank Olson wanted to sever his ties with the Army and CIA, Frank started talking about his participation in the experiment, which may have led to the government offing Olson. So I know that is a lot, and it is slightly more than just a speculation. We're going to get into the evidence here shortly. But by now, it's pretty well known that throughout the 40s, 50s, and 60s, Both the U.S. Army and the CIA tried to use hallucinogenic drugs, such as LSD, as both an offensive weapon and as a way to make, like, psychic super soldiers. Programs like MKUltra, MKNaomi, Project Bluebird, Project Artichoke. Lots of these things were trying to find different ways of using LSD for, like, offensive and defensive means. Some of the interest was promoted by was prompted by reports of the Soviet Union doing experiments with drugs around the same time. Also, stuff around psychic powers and hypnosis. This was very popular around this time for lots of different intelligence agencies. Alberelli uncovered a report from 1949 by the director of the Edwood Arsenal, which was where many U.S. government LSD experiments were carried out. And this report stated that the army should do everything possible to launch so-called field experiments using this drug. And later in his 2009 book, Alberelli claims that he found references to a government document with the label RE, Pont Saint-Esprit, and F, Olson Files, SO, SPAN, / France, Operation File, Inclusive, Olson, Intel Files, Hand Carry to Bellin. Tell him to see to it that these are buried. This document does exist. Like we do have this label on this document. But like the actual contents of the document are gone. But this is just like a label that is being referenced as.
We just know there was a thing with this title. Great.
Oh boy.
So the document label references Frank Olson and David Bellin. So Bellin was the executive director of the Rockefeller Commission, created by the White House in the mid-70s to investigate abuses carried out worldwide by the Central Intelligence Agency. Mm-hmm. So Alberelli believes that the Frenchtown LSD incident, which is like the Pont Saint-Esprit, which is the name of the town, and the F. Olson files mentioned in the document would definitely show that if the document hadn't been buried, as it was said in the label, the CIA, it would show that the CIA was experimenting on the townspeople by dosing them with what he thinks was LSD. Now, there is also a bit more to it than that. Using FOIAs, he got a hold of another CIA document, a two-page report from 1954 detailing a conversation between a CIA agent and a representative of the Sandoz Chemical Company. So the Sandoz base was the place where Albert Hofmann invented LSD in 1938. And it was only a few hundred kilometers away from Pont Saint-Esprit, the town where this happened. So the chemical company was actually pretty close, relatively to like Europe. And it was also the only place where LSD was being made at the time, and they were providing both the army and the CIA with a lot of acid. But I mean, they're also giving it to universities. They gave lots to Timothy Leary initially.
They like, sure did.
They did give
quite a lot to Tim Leary.
they were giving it out to a lot of different universities and research people, but including the U.S. government. So the CIA agent wrote. In this report, that was like he was detailing a dinner he had with this representative of the chemical company, and he reported that after having several drinks, the scientist started talking about the Pont Saint-Esprit incident. The Sandoz official blurted out, "The Pont Saint-Esprit secret was that it was not the bread at all," continued the Sandoz official. "For weeks, the French tied up our laboratories with analyses of the bread. It was not the grain ergot. It was a diethyl laminate." Sorry, it's the last part of the LSD name.
Yeah, diethyl acid.
The diethylaminide-like compound.
Yeah.
So
yeah, lysergic diethyl acid is what LSD stands for.
So yeah, the scientist said that it was like basically an LSD like compound. So that was a report detailing a dinner that a CIA agent had with this scientist. And that document was uncovered. It was from like the '50s. Now this next part has a little bit less proof to it because there's no documents backing this up. But Alberelli also claims that during his digging, two former CIA researchers reached out to him and revealed some details of some possible details of the method of the poisoning. They told him that the village was subjected to an air blitz of pulverized LSD.
Holy shit!
What?
They acid bombed him. I'm sorry, that's fucking based.
So, to force the townspeople into taking a substance through the air. According to the researchers, this manner of distribution proved mostly unsuccessful, forcing the CIA to move on to phase two, which was contaminating local food. So apparently, the air blitz was a thing, it didn't work super well.
Yeah, that's a bummer.
Yeah, I know. Although, actually,
we will talk about Sophie buy us a plane.
We will talk about this later. But the CIA did do more air blitzing of acid in New York City. Actually, they would ride around in cars. In poorer, more like multicultural areas, shooting LSD out of the back of the car to see what would happen to people.
I mean, take out the racism, and that really is a dream job. Just driving around cities, air dosing people with acid at random, smoking cigarettes, probably. Oh my God.
So, with the conclusion drawn that it was one of the town's bakeries being the source of the poisoning, Albarelli says it was possible that LSD was put in or onto the bread. Lots of the scientists dispatched to investigate the poisoning after it took place were actually from the Sandoz Chemical Company. They studied the situation for like 2 or 3 weeks, and gave the explanation that would later be kind of disproven, that it was ergot poisoning, which they told to town officials and the British Medical Journal. What no one knew at the time was that, one, the existence of LSD in the first place, and two, that Sandoz was the company making it and giving these drugs to the U.S. Army and to the CIA. And apparently Albert Hoffman himself went to the town to investigate this incident. One last thing on like the physical evidence side of things. Albarelli also found an undated White House document that appeared to be part of a larger file that had been sent to members of the Rockefeller Commission, containing the names of two French nationals who had been secretly employed by the CIA and made direct references to the, quote, Pont Saint-Esprit incident. The document linked former CIA biological warfare expert and the chief of the Fort Derrick's Special Operations Division. So those were all places that they were experimenting with this similar kind of thing.
Yeah.
We have mentioned the Rockefeller Commission a few times now. If you remember, the names Frank Olson, one of the CIA researchers on LSD, and David Belin, they were on the label of that missing document. But Belin was the executive director of the White House Commission to investigate the CIA's abuses and crimes, which was called the Rockefeller Commission. It was formed by President Ford in 1975 to investigate abuses and other activities by the CIA. And a few other intelligence agencies that were operating within the states. So the Rockefeller Commission revealed not only the reason why we know about MKUltra was because of the Rockefeller Commission. This is how we know this was a thing. So it not only revealed stuff about like programs around MKUltra, but it also revealed the details of the CIA dosing their own scientist Frank Olson with LSD and possibly killing him. There's also a Netflix series about this called Woodward, which I haven't actually watched yet, so I don't know how good or accurate it is. But they did make a series a few years ago about the death of Frank Olson, and all of the weird, sketchy stuff surrounding both his job and his death.
Yeah.
We do love the CIA, folks.
Uh huh. So the commission also concluded that the head of the CIA's LSD program, Dr. Sidney Gottlieb, destroyed all of the drug program's records in 1973 to hide the details of possibly illegal actions. And he was personally involved in the torture of Frank Olson. 20 years after Mr. Olson's death and 10 years after the LSD experiments were halted, Dr. Gottlieb ordered the destruction of all the records of the program, including a total of 152 separate files. This came shortly after other reports that records were being destroyed by Richard Helms, the then director of Central Intelligence. So it's undoubtedly true that the CIA was up to some shit involving LSD around the exact time period of this French town incident.
Yeah, it's certainly not like you're not coming out of nowhere suggesting the CIA may have dosed all these people.
No,
because they did it to a bunch of folks. If they didn't do it here, they'd done similar shit.
It's also worth mentioning at this point that like this is like the point where the CIA is also running this like enormous heroin network out of France. As like basically they have this deal with the French where they're like, okay, so the French mob can like basically move all the heroin they want in exchange, they'll like stop the communists from taking control of the Port of Marseilles. And so this is all also going on like at the same time that they're doing the LSD stuff. It's great.
Yeah. So there's some historians that think the LSD theory does not hold enough water. Stephen Kaplan is a U.S. historian specializing in the French food history and the author of the 2008 book Cursed Bread, which follows this incident. He says that he is, I have numerous objections to this paltry evidence that this against the CIA. First of all, it's clinically incoherent. LSD takes effects in just a few hours, whereas the inhibitants showed symptoms only after 36 hours or more. Furthermore, LSD does not cause the digestive elements or the vegetative effects described by the townspeople. So to both those claims, I say they're not necessarily true. It's unclear how soon the delirious effects took place. For some people, they were the first effect felt. So the whole thing about like the effects only taking effect after 36 hours, that's not necessarily true. And also, LSD can definitely have nauseating or digestive effects.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So that's not. And but like there were other types of symptoms that are not common for what we think of as like modern LSD.
Yeah,
but so, again, this is the 1950s, and we don't know what they were actually on. It may not be what we think of as like LSD now. It could be slightly, you know, this is a whole class of psychoactive drugs that's unclear what they were all actually being dosed with.
Yeah, who the fuck knows what they were being given, and who the fuck knows what the actual like dose amount was?
Yeah, we have no idea.
And it's also, you know, I think it's Leary was the origin of the phrase that like the things that determine what happens on a trip are set, setting, and dose. So your mindset, where you take it, and who you take it around, and the dose, and the fact that these are somewhat unique symptoms could be to the fact that like other people taking acid have never taken it this way, where your whole town is all dosed at once without knowing what acid is. Like,
yeah. So yeah. Kaplan's other objections revolve around like the delivery system. He says it's absurd, this idea of transmitting a very toxic drug by putting it in the bread. As for pulverizing it for ingestion through the air, that technology wasn't even possible at the time. Most compellingly, why would they choose the town of Pont-Saint-Esprit to conduct these tests? It was half destroyed by the U.S. Army during fighting with the Germans in the Second World War. It makes no sense. And to that I say, that makes it the perfect town for the CIA to fuck with.
Yeah, I mean, like, the CIA they generally would choose to dose someone with acid because it sounded funny. Like,
yeah,
like, they didn't give a
like,
shit.
I think the fact that this town was already kind of like only half inhabited and half destroyed by the Second World War, that makes it the perfect town to fuck with. Like,
yeah.
And also, the CIA and the government very much did have the means to try to distribute stuff via the air, because we can see other documents around the time of them doing this to specific areas of New York City. They also tried to poison the entire New York subway with LSD in the 50s, but that was shut down by higher-ups in the Central Intelligence Agency.
Unfortunately. God, what a time that would have been.
But Kaplan isn't sure Urquhart's the responsible either. He says that ergot contamination would not have worked because it doesn't make sense that only one sack of grain would have been affected. And he says if it was ergot, the effects would have been way more widespread.
Yeah, that does sound.
He rules out LSD on the grounds that the symptoms that people suffered, although similar, don't quite fit what we modernly think of the drug. Also, I don't think Kaplan's ever taken LSD, so I don't think he actually knows what he's talking about.
I think he's right about it probably not being ergot, but I don't think he knows much.
Yeah,
about
he also points out that LSD probably wouldn't have survived the fierce temperatures of the baker's oven. Although Alberelli counters that LSD could have been added after the fact to like the surface of the bread.
Sure, yeah, you could just drop it on.
You could just drop it on with liquid blotters, which would also explain how the effects were so different from person to person, because one person may be having a whole drop of LSD, where some may only have like a tiny little like, you know, speck of moist liquid. So that can explain some things. But you know, this is still pretty much a mystery. You know, it's very clear. It very well could have been some kind of hidden LSD CIA experiment, or the CIA could have just been, you know, interested in studying what happened in the town, since they were also doing studies into psychoactive substances at the time. It could be either or. And that's where it's spooky, because you'll never know.
Ooh.
Ooh. So yes, that is the spooky incident of a French town basically thinking that they lost their minds, and then
love to see it.
Do we?
I think it's funny.
It is a little funny. It's definitely a little funny. It is a great example of like the worst way to trip.
Yeah, that's pretty high up there. Anyway, critical support to the CIA for dosing random people with acid. always one of my favorite sets of stories. You love to see it.
So yeah, tune in tomorrow for more spooky tales.
For another spooky story.
And you can follow the spooky social media that poisons your brain at
twitter.com.
Happen Here Pod and Cool Zone Media, which yes, Twitter will poison your brain. That is just as spooky. Goodbye.
Way more spooky. Way worse for your brain than surprise CIA acid, to be honest.
Ooh.
The acid wears off.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, from Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives of women history has forgotten. We've always been intrigued by stories of disappearances, whether it's a fraudster from the 17th century who kept evading the authorities or a novelist who taunted the Nazis and faked her own death. We all want to know, what happened next? To find out, listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.